The conference is now.
Why is he going to dial into the bridge?
No, I'm sorry. That we were.
Oops.
Is it Kelly Kessler?
Yes.
Yep.
Funky voicemail.
Hello.
Hello, Kelly.
Hello. Yes.
Maybe.
Hey, Kelly. This is Regan with MDU.
Hey, how you doing, Regan?
Good. How's it going with you today?
Good.
Good. We have you on conference. We're in the commission.
Okay.
Room.
Just give me 1 second. I got to get out of the spot here.
Okay.
If I lose you, I'll call you right back or call me back because I got bad reception, but I got to get out to the spot where I can talk here.
Okay.
Okay, so we're ready to start, huh?
We're going.
Okay. Good afternoon, everyone. It's 2:03, February 16th, 2017. I'm Randy Christman, a chairman of North Dakota Public Service Commission. This is an informal hearing on case number PU-16-770, Montana Dakota Utilities Company, electric service agreement with Bronson's Marketplace at their Bowman location. With me today is Commissioner Julie Fedorchak. Steve Call was in the room, but is going to probably be in and out. And Victor Shook from our staff is here. And Tammy Aberly from MDU, I'll let you all just introduce yourselves, if you would, please.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioners. Good afternoon. Tammy Aberly, Director of Regulatory Affairs with MDU. Also here with me today is Regan Brills from our Dickinson office. He's the Energy Services Manager for the Badlands region. Also Larry Oswald, who's the Manager of Business Development and Marketing and Energy Services Programs, sorry. I have a long title, Larry. And Stephanie Bosch, the Regulatory Affairs Manager. And also on the line today is Kelly Kessler, the owner of the Bronson's Marketplace, the customer we're working with this agreement that is before you today.
Okay, thank you for the introductions. And I'm going to kind of just turn things over to Commissioner Fedorchak because it's your portfolio.
Well, this is kind of a interesting project because I've never worked with this economic development tariff, so I'm excited to learn a little bit more about it and ask some questions. And it sounds like it's a pretty straightforward arrangement that you've already negotiated, but we'll just have some questions and proceed that way. Did you have anything you wanted to just walk through, Tammy?
Sure, we do just have some very brief opening comments.
Okay, very good.
We can.
We'll do that, and then we'll ask Victor to talk a little bit, and then we'll go into. We'll ask questions along the way or at the end, however it works out best.
Great.
And then does Kelly have anything he'd like to say?
Kelly is really on if you have any questions
okay.
for him.
Very good.
He doesn't have any prepared comments at this point.
Okay, and then just to be clear, because we don't have that many of these informals, but. If there are disputed facts, that pretty much ends the informal, and we would need to go to a formal hearing then.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll just start out here today, and as I noted, who's with me today in providing an overview of this application before you. Just a little bit of history. The economic development rate was first approved for us back in 1991. It was subsequently changed or it was
it was allowed to continue on. I think that took place in around 1996. And in the 2004 electric rate case, there were some changes made to that rate. It was originally a discount on energy, and at that time it moved to a discount on the demand component of the rate. This is the first agreement that we've entered into under the economic development rate for quite some time. In fact, I believe when I looked, it was 2003. So that's why it appears new to you. We haven't been in front of you with one of these. Regan will walk through the details of the agreement and why the use of the rate was appropriate in this case. With estimated load at 1,175,000 kilowatt hours and 215 kW, it does meet the requirements of the tariff, the rate 34 tariff.
What were the amounts again?
1,175,000 kilowatt hours and 215 kW is the estimated load for the grocery store.
Okay.
And as I noted, and as in the filing, it is a new grocery store in the Bowman area that will provide much-needed service to the citizens of Bowman and also incremental revenues to MDU and that provides a benefit to other customers, those incremental revenues that we wouldn't have otherwise if we weren't the ones serving this particular customer. Under the terms of the tariff and therefore under the agreement, the discounted rate will stay the same for the first 3 years. In year four, that discount drops by 25%, and in year five, the discount drops to 50%. And at the end of year five, the customer will move on to the otherwise applicable rate, which at this time would be our large general service rate 30 schedule. So clearly that's all.
How does the rate case affect this?
Well, the rate case will essentially, depending on what rates are approved in the case, the discount itself would potentially go down because the agreement is set at a specific rate charge. So as if rate 30 were to go up in the amount charged, the discount value will drop. It is subject to the rate case schedule. I mean,
so the chart here that looks like it's kind of locked in, that isn't locked in. It would be changed. I'm looking at the rate in the agreement.
Yeah, the rate in the agreement is set forth as the charges noted there.
I know, but would that change with the rate case?
No.
So they would stay the same regardless of what happens.
Right, the discount. Yeah.
Okay.
Right. If the rate 30 charge ultimately was increased, rate 30 is the otherwise applicable rate. That would be our general service rate that they would have taken service on.
Okay.
But for this rate 34.
So this one wouldn't be affected. If they don't get it, they'd be subject to the rate 30. That would increase, obviously.
Right.
And then when they get done with this, they'd be subject to the rate 30.
Correct.
Okay.
And just to be clear, they're going to pay the rate 30 energy charges. They're going to pay everything under rate 30 except for this discount in the demand component under rate 30.
All right.
So it's not a discount off the entire bill. It is the demand charge component that that is discounted.
Okay. So I have some questions on that, on the demand versus energy charge. You mentioned that it used to be a discount on the energy charge.
Mm-hmm.
Why was that changed?
You know, I believe at the onset in the early 90s, Montana, Dakota had a significant amount of energy available on the system with the AVS-2 contract. So it made sense at that point in time to discount the energy. As we've transpired through that at the expiration of AVS-2, we're purchasing energy off the MISO market. So it made more sense to discount on the distribution demand component than it did on energy that we were purchasing off the market or had to replace under that AVS-2 contract.
Mm-hmm. And can you speak at all, Tammy, since I'm learning about this rate along with this specific case, what the parameters are in terms of what they have to meet and how those were established? What's the logic behind the parameters established?
There's quite a bit of history under the rate. The company proposed, I believe it was, if I recall correctly, it was like 200 kW, that it had to be a load of at least that size. At the time of the initial docket, the commission at that time actually first ordered that it drop down to 50. We were concerned with that and actually filed for rehearing or reconsideration of that decision, and ultimately landed on the 200 kW, which is the minimum today.
Okay.
And so it really was, the purpose of it was to provide a tool for loads that are larger in size that if they're, you know, relocating in North Dakota, putting something new into in a different location in North Dakota, or just simply increasing their load. So we wanted it high enough, you know, that it made a difference, if you will. And so that's those parameters were decided upon in that docket.
But you mentioned even with the discount, they're still contributing to your revenue.
Yes. So, for example, the discount in year one is about $6,000. But the total revenues that we would receive from the customer in year one would be $90,100. So they're paying toward all the energy, all the variable costs. They're paying toward, you know, they're still contributing toward demand costs on the system, and again, all the variable costs.
Okay. Do you negotiate this with them, or
yes,
is there?
Yes, and that's, I'm going to turn it over. Regan had a few comments that he wanted to provide, and that I think it'll get to that.
Okay.
Your question there directly. Thanks, Regan.
I just have a summary here that I put together from kind of the first contact with Kelly and then how we move forward. Oh, the MDU district rep in Hedinger notified me of plans for a new grocery store in Bowman. At that time then, I made contact with the architect firm, who is a DBS group, to let them know that MDU has natural gas and electricity available in the area to serve their location. Through discussions with the architect about proposed routes of facilities located on their lot, Kelly Kessler, the owner, inquired about MDU electric rates. I discussed General Electric service rate 30 with Kelly and the associated charges. Kelly asked for other options available as he wanted to lower his overhead costs and was considering another supplier of energy. I looked at the firm service economic development rate 34 is a possibility, depending on the criteria set forth in the tariff, and also consulted with MDU Regulatory Affairs Department and Marketing Departments to confirm availability. I started discussing the options of Rate 34 with Kelly. After working with Kelly and the architect, we were able to confirm that the estimated load would meet the criteria set forth in the tariff. A reduced demand charge was negotiated with the customer, and the Economic Development Electric Service Agreement was executed between MDU and the customer that will provide a benefit to the customer as well as the existing customers. And that's where we ended with the agreement that you have.
Excellent. Well, and I'm sure Bowman is excited to get a grocery store.
I think they are.
All right. Do you have any questions, Randy?
I think Victor might have a few, and then I'll maybe have a few after that. So
sure.
I'll see if he asks them.
Want to make
first.
Some comments, Vic?
Sure. So I did pass out a memo to the commissioners before this, just kind of summarizing the case and kind of quoting the dollar amount that Tammy had mentioned. Also, you know, the first 3 years, rough estimate, about $6,000 discount is what This would provide, I think it was another 4,500 in year four and 3,000 in year five, after which time it would expire and go back to rate 30 or whatever is applicable based on their usage at that time. I did some additional research just to see if do we still use this economic development idea elsewhere with the other utilities that we regulate in the state. NSP did have an economic development rate, but that was terminated after 2004, and it has not been reinstated since. Otter Tail Power did have one in the past as well, and they were ordered in 2009, actually, to get rid of it, but it was done in kind of an odd way where it was removed via a rider that credits back to everyone, rather than doing a full, essentially, a rate case and redoing all of their tariff and rate schedules. They created one new credit rider that offset this economic development idea. And that one may have been different. I think that may have actually provided actual cash to communities for economic development.
Yeah. But NSP may have, too.
They may have.
Some of those in the past that were next.
Yeah. But in kind of researching that, I did find Otter Tail actually does intend to file for a new economic development rate within the next few months. So that's kind of the history I was able to find. As to some of the points MDU made here, I don't have any issues with what any of their facts are. One question I did have for Regan, you had mentioned they were researching going through another supplier for energy. Are you talking with one of the co-ops?
Yes, down in Bowman, the Slope Electric, the co-op there, and MDU both have unlimited franchises.
Okay.
And this location is within city limits.
Okay. That was going to be my question. I was thinking there was, an established franchise line.
No. And they were actually located kind of right in the middle of the two of us, so.
Sure, sure.
They were just exploring their options, trying to reduce his costs as much as he can. And
Okay. Do we have an estimate of what the total cost to MDU is to extend service to this new facility?
We do. We estimated the cost at just over $33,000.
Okay. And that's including transformers and...
No, we don't include transformers. That's wire and any junction boxes and all that, excluding transformer.
Yeah. So this doesn't require a separate transformer?
It does.
Okay.
We just, how our tariff works with when we give a customer their 2 years annual revenue, the transformer is not included in that cost.
Okay.
What does that mean, giving the customers the 2 years of revenue?
That's our extension policy that we have on the electric side.
Okay.
So that's designated in the tariff book as rate 112, our extension. So I think the meter and the transformer are excluded from that in that if that customer left, you'd pick up the transformer and reutilize that transformer and the meter. So it's just long been our extension policy, and the formula is based on excluding those particular costs.
Okay, so $33,000 is the cost to, so MDU is paying that cost, or
that's the estimated cost, the construction cost. Under the tariff, there wasn't a contribution requirement because the revenue stream, at the discounted revenue stream, sufficiently covers that cost. So under the extension policy, we look at it a little longer term, but, you know, that revenue is there to support that investment, then the customer doesn't have to contribute additionally to that extension.
Okay.
What about the transmission, the transformer? How do you justify that, or if that's needed for an extension?
As I noted, it's really treated like a meter in that if that it's not a sunk investment, if you will, like the line would be or the
some of these other materials so that that transformer can be picked up and put onto a different customer, if you will. So it's not ever been included as part of our extension policy. That's not always the best answer, but that has been long time been our policy on the extension.
Well, that's fine for policy, but just kind of for anecdotally, I mean, yeah. How much is it costing the MDU system to hook this guy up?
Above the revenue. I mean, you know, our revenue stream. If we, you know, we've got a one-time investment here of 33. Now, I can't tell you what a transformer is off the top of my head. I have no idea for this customer what that would be. But we would see 90,000 rising to upwards to $96,000 revenue every year. And the life of that, it's providing the revenue stream sufficient to cover. So we look at the return and the O&M on that investment, not so much the $33,000, but what it would cost. And I often use just a rough estimate of like 20% to say that's going to be your return, your taxes, your depreciation, your O&M. So that's really the annual revenue requirement, if you will, that needs to be recovered by that revenue stream. But that's really how we got the 2-to-1 ratio, as a calculation of that, but something easy, but straightforward for the folks to utilize as they're looking at extensions.
Well, I get that 96, whatever it was, $1,000 is a lot more than 33, but the revenue is not profit. And you're telling us you're having to buy energy off the market. So with a discounted rate, how do we know that that is enough to cover the $33,000?
Yeah. And our fuel costs are going to be, when I look at this, about $25,000. So we've got $75,000 in margin to, again, cover if that was, I would say, on average, $6,000 revenue requirement each year. On the $33,000, if I use my 20% calculation, and we've got, and you're right. I mean, we should if we exclude all fuel costs, it's $75,000 revenue stream. And I need to correct myself. I misspoke with regard to the rate case. Right, you're in the agreement. There will be a review of these demand charges based on the outcome of the rate case. I apologize for that. That's correct.
All right. Victor, do you have any other concerns from the advocacy standpoint?
No. It's more so a policy thing than anything else. So.
Right.
Otherwise, we're things in order.
Then, since you throw out that term, just for Mr. Kessler's purposes, when Commissioner Fedorchak mentions Victor and being advocacy, he was appointed to kind of look out for the consumer side of things on behalf of, I guess, consumers throughout the MDU service territory, and bring that side of the debate to us to help us make a good decision. So, Kel, if you're still on, that's what that is about. Regan, would you tell me again, if I can find it here, where you said Slope Electric and MDU both have what kind of franchises?
Unlimited.
And so I'm not very familiar with that. How does that work? Every customer has access to either one, and they can...
Within city limits. That's correct. Sometimes you see most of the time you'll see one utility provider have a limited franchise because maybe they serve 10 customers in city limits, which were out of city limits at one time, and then city limits kind of surrounded it. And they have a limited franchise for only this little pocket here. So usually you see a limited and then an unlimited for the other supplier can serve anybody then within the incorporated city limits, but in this instance, and we have them in other locations as well, where there'll be two unlimited franchises that the city has I don't know how to put it, but signed with.
So is a good part of Bowman have duplicate infrastructure built out, or has it pretty much pulled where there's certain neighborhoods that are MDU and certain neighborhoods that are slope?
Yeah, it has pretty much worked out like that. We have some fringe areas where we're kind of both at. There was one last year. It was a new hotel in Bowman. MDU was in front lot line, and the co-op was at rear lot line. And so they were just kind of right in the middle within surrounding the lot. We were on one side, they were on the other. So you get stuff like that. A lot of it, the co-op will have come through to connect to make a loop or something like that. It's not necessarily putting in duplicate facilities or anything, but they'll have had a loop line in there, and we will have too, and it just kind of turns out like that to where we're really close.
This area where the new store is being built, you have infrastructure there right now?
We do.
And does Slope also?
Slope.
Or would they, how, I guess so the question is about how far they'd have to build to get to it.
I think it's two lots away, I'm not sure. They serve the next business over to the east.
Okay, and then after how long is Bronson's locked in with you? In 5 years, do they get to start negotiating again and telling you, hey, fess up, or we're going to go to Slope?
No, once we serve power to their lot, then they're locked in with MDU at that time.
Based on the city's, that's how their franchise agreement works?
No, just duplication of facilities. Since we would already have our facilities on that lot for the cooperative to come over, then that would be duplicating. So
okay,
just based on that.
Well, how that all evolved was really the source of most of my questions, because these don't happen. But you said there's some other communities that have these types of franchises. You know, I don't need an exact count for you to name them, but are we talking two or three other communities in MDU's area, or is this pretty common, or what?
It's not that common in my area, which is over in the western North Dakota area. I think there's two or three. The other one that just that sticks out is Killdeer. It's the same. We're trying to push and work for our service area agreements, and that would be the best case scenario for us, to where we have designated areas. But we've went to both councils in Bowman and Killdeer and tried to push for that, and they didn't want to.
Do you have to get any sort of approval from the city for serving? Or, you know, under the franchise, you can just pick who the customer can pick who they want?
If there's two unlimited franchises?
Yeah.
Yes, within reason of duplicating facilities. Yes, we don't.
There's no risk of that here, the duplicating facilities?
No.
And you don't have to get a little PCNM from us?
No, because we're within city limits. Okay. So, yeah, we do not have to, in this case, file for a PCNM. As Regan noted, and the ones that I'm aware of, and I can't speak to the dual or the dual franchise, but I do know that in this part of the region, we're working on, I think there's three or four service area agreements, so that's positive, in several other communities, so. Mm-hmm. Maybe we'll get to Killdeer. You know, maybe something will move at Killdeer and Bowman to.
Yeah.
It certainly is a better situation for all.
But the fact that most of the other towns have the more clear franchise lines is why we don't see these coming up commonly. This is kind of caused by that city decision.
Yes.
That the customer has this.
One or the other.
Yeah.
You know, the city has drawn the lines or. And said, we're in the city, and of course, then the co-op is outside. If it turned out that it was closer for us or all those other reasons, we may ask you, if it makes more sense for us to serve. So there's those where it's defined, and then those with the service area agreements are in place.
This is what's kind of a perfect case scenario also, that there's two unlimited franchises and no service area agreements. So that's the kind of the most disputed stuff we see within a city limits.
And yet there's no dispute over this.
No.
How would we know if there was?
Well,
we have heard nothing from the cooperative disputing it, and I guess
and
they didn't.
And this was noticed, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I guess the fact that the customer signed the agreement must have kind of taken them out of the market.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Is what I was reading into it anyway.
Right,
I don't have any other
questions. So back to you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Well, you really didn't bring us any paperwork this time. That's kind of a change.
They usually do.
But we have the original filing. And then the recording. Ms. Kelly, do you have any questions or comments?
I apologize. I'm not hearing as well as I should be, but my connection's not as good. But not really. I guess the only thing I would like to say is when I had approached, or Regan had let me know that there were services, both sides of this, we were at the point where we were doing our market studies and our cost analysis if this project was going to be feasible. And everything for our side of it is so tight. You know, we wanted to bring a grocery store to this market, but with our market studies and everything is so tight because there's not a lot of population down here, even though I know that's a pretty good spread of rural areas. Everything was, like I said, was so tight for us to be able to do this that it was really important for us to get, and it, you know, it sounds kind of funny, but every penny we can to, on the expense side, for us to make this project feasible. So that's why we really analyzed everything we could possibly do on our part to get our expenses as low as possible to make this project feasible, because, you know, it's not a highly populated area, and it's very much needed down here. You know, I don't know, it's probably been 30 years or maybe longer, I'm not sure exact time frame, but it's really way overdue for, you know, like a grocery store to come to this market, because it's really suffering down here as far as what they have to give to the consumers. So that's why it was so important for us to do everything we can to try to bring the best grocery store we could down here, but also our costs are so high, so we were doing everything we could to try to find out what our expense is going to be to make this thing feasible to do.
Okay, thank you.
So I bet you're looking for a way to lock that in more than 5 years.
Yeah, that would be good.
Okay, well, I will say we don't make a decision right now, but I would imagine a decision would be forthcoming fairly soon. And as a Mercer County guy, I will just say that I think the people of Bowman are going to be very happy when you're down there and set up with a new store, Kelly, because you've been a great service in addition to Mercer County. The only written evidence is the company's filing and Victor's memo, also the recording of the discussion today. Is there any objection to this being placed into evidence for the record?
No.
Okay. So these filings and the recording will be part of the record. And I haven't conducted too many of these yet. I got to check off my boxes here. I think with that, we're concluded. This informal is adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Kelly.
Thank you.